Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, November 19th. Here we are with less than a week to go before Thanksgiving, and it's understandable if you're confused about what kinds of family gatherings are COVID-safe for what kinds of family members, and specifically the role of COVID testing before joining other people who you don't live with. We mentioned this briefly on yesterday's show, and we'll expand on it for today's, and especially to clarify. Here's Mayor Bill de Blasio speaking yesterday morning.
Get tested before you attend major gatherings or family gatherings. Get tested because you'll know you're safe.
Mayor de Blasio yesterday, Dr. Fauci was also on TV yesterday and didn't mention anything about testing. But this also raises anew the issue of the role of testing generally in combination with vaccines in the pursuit to get back to a pre-pandemic normal level of safety and activity, and whether public policy has maybe de-emphasized testing too much as they rightly try to get everyone vaccinated first. There's also the breaking news this morning. If you haven't heard it yet, it's just an hour or so old, that the FDA has just recommended approval of the Pfizer and Moderna booster shots for all adults, and some mixed messages that I've seen about whether a last-minute booster just before the holiday helps protect yourself or others right away. So we'll try to clear that up, too. So back with us now, I'm very happy to have Dr. Daniel Griffin, MD, PhD, infectious disease clinician and researcher at Columbia University, chief of infectious disease for the ProHealth health system, and president of the group Parasites Without Borders, which doesn't sound like a good thing, but I'm sure it is. Dr. Griffin, we always learn a lot when you come on. Welcome back to WNYC.
All right. Thank you, Brian. I'm going to have to give up a few jobs so there's less intro. We can get more content covered.
Exactly. But now you're going to have to explain Parasites Without Borders. What is that?
Oh, I appreciate that. So Parasites Without Borders is a not-for-profit that was founded with the motto of getting knowledge to the people and places that need it the most. And so we provide a number of educational resources, videos, books, and actually support a lot of organizations and going out there into the field. So yeah, parasiteswithoutborders.com is our website. And every week we post full-length articles that we think are important in understanding COVID. And our sister organization, Microbe TV, we do a lot of podcasts trying to keep people up to speed. And this is the one time my children are proud of me. They actually listen to it on an international space station. So,
wow, that's a place. That's a good place. You have children on the International Space Station? Is that what you just said?
No. That's the only time my children are ever impressed. You know, the children roll their eyes. It's the one time they don't. One time they light up and say, really? Yeah.
Got it. That's really without borders. Well, you heard the mayor of New York City there. Should everyone get tested before their Thanksgiving gatherings?
You know, my motto is never miss an opportunity to test. Testing is really a tremendous way of decreasing risks around the holidays. And I know we put a lot of emphasis on vaccines, right? But we do know vaccinated people are less likely to get infected, but they can get infected. Vaccinated people are less likely to spread, but they can. So if you're having a get together and there's, at risk, vulnerable individuals, which there will be across the turkey table throughout America, if you're getting together with your parents, with your grandparents, throwing in those tests can really decrease risks. And to go into, just sort of the mechanics of this, if you can do two tests, that's better than one. If you do a test on Wednesday morning, you do another test on Thursday morning, you're really going to reduce your risk of showing up at that family gathering, being contagious, being transmissible.
Well, let's talk about this idea of multiple tests. I've heard advice that it's best to get a PCR test in enough time before Thanksgiving, because those take a few days to come back, and then a rapid test on the day of. But other people only mention the rapid tests, and I think that's probably what you were referring to just now when you said a test Wednesday and a test Thursday. So are the rapid tests alone enough, in your opinion?
So I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to go into sort of the details of what I mean by that. You know, a test cannot predict the future, and that's one of the challenges with the resulting delays with PCR. If you get a test and it's negative on Monday, it doesn't really tell us what's going to happen Thursday because there is this incubation period. If you get a test Wednesday morning and it's an antigen test, the reason we're saying test again the next day is that you may still be in an incubation period. You're exposed. There's not enough virus that we can pick it up yet. The day that a person is contagious, that day those antigen tests are positive. Let's say you get a PCR on Wednesday. PCRs can pick up a sort of growing infection a little bit sooner than those antigen tests. But if it's a delay of 3 or 4 days, by the time you find out, it might be Friday morning, and you might realize you've already exposed your family and friends.
When you say antigen test, that's the same as saying the same day rapid tests. What does antigen mean?
Yeah, so the tests, we have two ways of testing for the virus that causes COVID-19. And one is looking for the genetic material, right? That's our PCR test. And the other is looking for the viral proteins, and that's the antigen. So maybe we should call them viral protein tests. Maybe that's a little bit. But yeah, those are rapid 15-minute resulting tests. You know, more tests, the better, right? Because the test can't predict the future. That's why even if you had a negative PCR on Monday, I still want people to think about doing a rapid test on Thursday.
Here's a question from a listener via Twitter. It says at least 8 of our guests to a very big Thanksgiving will be in their 20s. What is the least expensive way for them to test or test twice? Home test in DR, I'm not sure if that means Dominican Republic or what that refers to. Home test in DR costs $23, a lot for them. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that is a lot. So, right, everyone's got to make decisions. I think many of us wish the tests were less expensive. From a public health standpoint, it actually would make sense to make them as inexpensive as some countries like the UK and France, where they're basically free, Germany, where they're a couple dollars each. If money is an issue, which unfortunately, I don't think we're going to suddenly jump in and make these $1 a test in the next week, you may want to do just that one test right before you all get together. Fortunately, people in their 20s are going to be at lower risk, but also think about, you know, weight, medical comorbidities, you sort of make these decisions. I wish it wasn't just $23, because when we fall through and someone gets infected, someone ends up in the hospital, that's going to cost a lot more than $23 a test.
How well are they covered by insurance?
So most of these rapid tests, right, the ones that we're buying over the counter, this is money out of your pocket. There still are situations where you can go to one of these urgent care centers, and those have all ramped up drive-throughs, other really sort of ease of getting through. A lot of times those are actually going to be covered by your health insurance. So sometimes it can be cheaper for an individual to go to one of the city MDs or a ProHealth or a GoHealth and get that rapid test.
Felipe in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Felipe.
How are you, Brian? So the situation is my wife, my daughter, and I are all vaccinated. I have a 15-year-old daughter in my house. I also have a 9-year-old and a 2-year-old. They're not vaccinated. But 2 days ago, my 15-year-old lost her sense of taste and smell. And we took her to the urgent care. She came back positive for COVID-19. So the idea is, the thing after that is, we're a bit confused with the protocols for going forward. So we contacted the schools, and the schools told us to do a 10-day quarantine period. The doctor told us a 5-day quarantine period. And we went ahead and we canceled all our, we had a couple of parties going on at the house. We canceled. And most people kind of came back to us and told us, you know, we're vaccinated, you don't have to cancel. So people's assumptions is that because they're vaccinated, they're not immune.
Or they're not susceptible.
Right. And then even at work, people were like, well, look, it's, you know, we're vaccinated, so we don't really care if you come to the meetings or not. But we know that you're still able to transmit it anyway. So, yes, you may be vaccinated, but you're going to bring it to somebody else who may not be.
Dr. Griffin, so Felipe, what do you recommend for Felipe?
Yeah, so Felipe, this is a little complicated, and I'm gonna give you the rules, and we'll talk a little bit about what's the science behind the rules. So we've got these two terms quarantine and isolation, right? Isolation for the infected. That's how I get people to remember that. And as I talked about, when you are infected from that day, the onset of symptoms or that first positive test, you are potentially able to spread to others for the next 10 days, right? So the CDC and all the states across the board, isolation for the infected, that's 10 days. So your child who tested positive is going to be 10 days that we think that that individual can spread to others. And then we get into quarantine, and this gets a little more complicated. Because a person who's vaccinated is at less risk of getting infected and less risk of getting of spreading it to others, less but not still there, they have certain rules. So a fully vaccinated person does not necessarily have to quarantine. They can continue to go about their day. It is recommended that they wear a mask indoors and around others for the next 14 days. And this is 14 days that really the clock doesn't start until the end of your exposure to that isolating person, right? So that's 10 plus 14, you're wearing a mask, you're being extra careful. 5 to 7 days after the initial exposure, another 5 to 7 days after the end exposure. You want to test yourself because vaccinated people can get asymptomatic infections, but vaccinated people can continue to go out, do the things that they want to do. Now, an unvaccinated person, there's actually different rules. The CDC has a 14 days from last contact. Certain states shorten that. New York says for the unvaccinated, 10 days without a testing option. Some states, and this is not New York, they allow you to test out a little sooner. So think about continue exposure to the infected isolating person for 10 days forward, and then the clock starts. If you're in New York State, it's another 10 days if you're unvaccinated. In certain states, you can shorten that to 7 if you get a negative test in those last couple of days. So complicated navigating this. This is one of those things that hopefully this helps. And
sounds like, depending on the timeline of the story Felipe told us, they may have to cancel Thanksgiving.
You know, so Thanksgiving is going to be tough. The group of you, Felipe, that are already sort of together and getting exposed, maybe this is just going to be a small Thanksgiving for everyone. You really don't want to bring someone who's vulnerable into that setting because not only the individual, your child who's infected right now, but there's the risk that this is going to end up spreading to someone else, and then you would put someone at risk. So, gosh, timing is terrible.
Dr. Griffin, the Jen Psaki, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, PCR test experience, what do we learn from this? She had an exposure a few weeks ago on a Tuesday, then said she tested negative on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, but then tested positive on Sunday. What does that tell us about the true meaning of a single PCR test?
Yeah, so Brian, this is a great story, and I think it goes back to what I repeatedly tell people, that a test cannot predict the future, right? I think we used the pregnancy test on a prior show where we talked about getting your daughter tested before they go off to college. That's not going to predict the future. When you get exposed to someone who is infected, who has COVID, there is an incubation period. There may be a tiny amount of virus that actually gets into your nose, into your upper airways, but it is going to take days before that virus actually replicates to the point where we can detect it, where we know that you're going to go on to get sick. And so this is a perfect example. Now with the Delta variant, that period of time to exposure to that first positive test is about 4 days. So the day after exposure, it's going to be negative. The second day, it's going to be negative. The third day, it's probably still going to be negative. It's not till the fourth or fifth day that you start to see that positive test. The thing about PCRs, as we've talked about, they may pick it up a day before the antigen tests pick it up, but you're probably still not contagious. It's when the antigen test turns positive that you start to be contagious. When symptoms come on, that you start to be contagious. Some people have symptoms a little bit before they're contagious. Often people can be contagious for a day or two before those symptoms. So that's why don't just trust one test. That's why we talk about people who've been exposed getting a test 5 to 7 days afterwards. That's that sweet spot for determining whether or not you got infected from that exposure.
Let's take a call from Steve in Suffolk County. Steve, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Brian. First time, long time, and you're a gem. Out here in Suffolk County, we don't have access to that kind of the amount of testing that your guest is describing. In order to get testing out here, we have to be presenting symptoms. Do you guys have any idea on where we could get such abundant testing?
Yeah, this is Dan. I'll jump in. So we actually have, I'm going to put on my ProHealth hat for a moment. We have ProHealth urgent cares, and a number of them are out there in Suffolk. So you can certainly go in and get tested. And a lot of our facilities have convenient drive-through. Because you're doing it in that setting, a lot of times, I will say most of the time, this is something that will fall under your insurance coverage because, to be honest, I'll put on my UHG hat for a second, it is much less expensive to cover a test than it is to cover a hospitalization. The other side of this is those over-the-counter tests. Those you can pick up, Walmart, CVS, Target, the fancy French store. And these, you do not need anyone's permission. There's no one standing between you and access to these over-the-counter tests.
Yeah, I think you can visit a Target in the French Quarter of Ronkonkoma in Suffolk County and some other places. Steve, I hope that's helpful. I want to go to the question of booster shots. And there's some booster news this morning, which is that the FDA has now recommended approval of boosters, the ones from Pfizer and Moderna, for all adults over 18 in the United States. The CDC is expected to act quickly on that recommendation. And we know vaccination is very effective against hospitalization and death. Almost everyone dying or getting hospitalized for COVID was unvaccinated in the first 6 months after vaccinations began. Case pretty much closed on that. But now there is also the booster question. Dr. Fauci said on TV just yesterday that hospitalizations and deaths among fully vaccinated people over 65, meaning with two doses, are rising if they've gone more than 6 months without a booster or one dose of J&J. How do you see those numbers and the need for universal booster shots?
Yeah, so I know a lot of people, you know, sort of wanted to wait and see. And I think that wait and see period has passed. What we do know is that getting that third shot is safe. We are not seeing any safety concerns. However you felt after that second shot, that's about what you'll experience with that third shot. So it's safe. People who are over the age of 65, people who have other medical issues, they're not at zero risk of ending up in the hospital and death. And the other, let's be honest, nobody wants to get COVID. No one likes to be sick. So even if all the boosters do is reduce our chance of getting an infection, particularly going into the holiday season, it makes sense to go ahead with the boosters.
In the context of Thanksgiving, I've heard two versions in the last few days from respected people. So maybe somebody just got their information wrong, or maybe there's actual medical disagreement on this. But I've heard two versions of whether boosters need 2 weeks after the shot to become fully effective, like the original set did, or if they are so right away. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so there's a subtlety there, and I think that's fine. You know, the immune system doesn't suddenly turn on at 2 weeks. There's a gradual progression after that vaccination. So you're going to start to see a ramping up of your T cells at about 4 days afterwards. You're going to really see a ramping up of your B cells and those antibodies about 10 to 14 days afterwards. So there's going to be some gradual improvement. The sooner you get the vaccine, the sooner you're going to be up to that high level at day 14. But it's a gradual increase.
There are still 1,000 people a day dying from COVID in the United States. That's down from 2,000 a day at the peak of Delta this summer. But 1,000 people a day, this is how numb to it we've become. That would be another 365,000 people in the next year. That is still a pandemic emergency, isn't it, compared to any infectious disease in the last century since the Spanish flu?
you know, it is tough because we keep hearing about all the, like, you know, time to get back to normal and all the rest. But yeah, we are living in the midst of an ongoing pandemic with over 1,000 people dying a day. And that's become, we have become numb to that. But think, every one of those 1,000 individuals, it's someone's mother, it's someone's father, it's someone's sister, someone's brother. This is a tragedy. And the way we move forward is vaccinations, more testing, and hopefully very soon, in addition to the really powerful monoclonal antibodies, we're going to have oral antivirals.
And we're going to do a separate segment on that next week, but you want to give us a quick take on that. COVID treatments, Merck and Pfizer now have these antiviral pills to take early on after you've tested positive. And some reports say they can cut hospitalizations and deaths by 90%. Are you using either of those yet in your own practices at Columbia or ProHealth?
So not yet. On November 30th, that's when the FDA Advisory Committee is going to talk about the Merck product. That's about a 50% reduction. And Pfizer, which makes the Paxlovid, that's that 89%, 90% reduction in people progressing to hospital and death. That's going to get reviewed in December. So these are just right there on the horizon.
So as we wrap this up, Dr. Griffin, I want to come back to one issue that a number of the listeners have raised individually, but I think is really a social issue, a national issue that's going to need more attention. And a listener on Twitter pointed out, reacting to that caller from Suffolk before, writes, nice caller from Suffolk County on Brian Lehrer genuinely wants to know about dearth of testing. Insurance is not covering rapid tests. Why are we minimizing cost associated? So you acknowledged, we acknowledged in the conversation, you know, to a couple of callers and one person who sent in a question via tweet that that these rapid tests, especially if people are going to do them a lot, which is part of what we've been talking about, you know, regarding weaving them into people's regular routines, it's going to cost people a lot of money. So do you want to say something from a level of advocacy at all about the government requiring insurance companies to cover rapid tests or anything like that?
Yeah. So I don't know if Biden listens to your show, but I'm going to put in this plug anyway. Maybe Jen Psaki will listen. You know, just think about the amount of money we're spending, right? We just anteed in another $5 billion up to buy, you know, a bunch of the Pfizer medication, the Paxlovid. We've anteed up, you know, $2,000 per dose to get monoclonals out there to people. You know, we've bailed out hospitals to some enormous tune to pay for the, you know, the average $44,000 per COVID hospitalization. Getting accessible tests to our citizens, that is so much more cost effective. And also, it's a humanitarian thing. It's not just about dollars and cents. It's about preventing people from getting sick. It's about preventing our loved ones from ending up in hospital, or even preventing people from ending up with long COVID, where they continue to suffer for months and months.
Dr. Daniel Griffin from Columbia, ProHealth, and more. Always great to have you on. So informative. Thank you for answering my questions and listener questions. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Hey, thank you. And everyone, be safe.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.